it's an extension of office hours for other faculty members to ask questions as opposed to the students, but I guess we'll make an exception for this individual. Sir, do you have a question?
All these oops situations made me think of an oops situation that a friend of mine may be dealing with.
Hypothetically.
Yes, sir.
Hypothetically.
Yes, sir.
A sale happens that is clearly self-dealing. It is a disqualified person business. And now the transaction is agreed, it's self-dealing, it needs to be corrected. The business is now bankrupt, doesn't have the money, and the claim is that, well, we're trying to correct it, but the money's just not there to correct it. My question, I guess, is twofold. What do you think the likelihood is? I mean, the business itself is a disqualified person. Maybe the DPs own 100%, but maybe they only own 40%. What is the likelihood that the IRS would look through to the disqualified persons who are equity owners in that business to try and compel a correction? And secondly, at what point can the foundation report, or to the extent they're trying to correct, but they're not going to get all the money, do they have to continually report that they have a self-dealing transaction that has not been corrected? Or is there some period of time where they can stop reporting that they're 990PF?
Is the business a partnership or a corporation?
It's a corporation.
I think that helps you on the look-through question, would be my guess.
Let's tease that out a little bit. So, again, self-dealing transaction, obligation to correct. To what extent are disqualified persons who are shareholders of the business, could you sort of pierce the corporate veil and try and seek correction directly from the disqualified persons. So I think as Ruth, that's why to Ruth's point, I think it might be challenging for the service to expect a private foundation to be able to basically do an end run around state corporate law principles and pierce a corporate veil to force the shareholders who otherwise have limited liability to at least chip in towards correction. Do you agree?
I think so. I think it really matters whether they're 100% disqualified persons owned or 25% disqualified person owned. I think another factor that would matter, of course the answer is it depends, but another factor would be what's the dollars amount we're talking about? Are we talking about $50,000 or $50 million? Because if it's millions of dollars, I would be expecting the foundation to sue to try to recover and get themselves in that bankruptcy line. To the extent that there was reasonable potential to recover, and in a corporate setting, that would be recovering from all of the shareholders. I mean, that would be bad news to be able to really say, I tried to correct. But I think that from a practical advisory standpoint, going in and talking to the IRS and a closing agreement is probably your best. I mean, what do you think, Dave?
I would agree. It also would avoid the sort of perpetual reporting of not being able to seek, you know, full correction. Let me play with those facts a little bit, because actually, even though this is office hours, to make sure there was CLE, there are materials associated with this. And one of the sets of slides that Ruth put together deals with the New York State Attorney General going after a particular foundation for various acts of self-dealing, political activities, and shutting it down. Essentially, the State Attorney General enforcing basic tax law principles, if you will, to go after a particular foundation that you've all heard of, at least the principle of.
The materials are entirely hypothetical and anonymous, but they are based on stories that have made headlines and then have been taken from the headlines.
And when David asked his question about the obligation perhaps of the disqualified persons, it made me think of a client who's a private foundation that actually had it's a different set of circumstances, but a restricted gift to a charity that went under and went bankrupt. Turns out that the charity had made loans to directors, And it wasn't the IRS who got involved here. It was the state attorney general who said, we wonder if the directors have an obligation to restore funds to... Actually, the directors had made loans to the charity and had gotten repaid. And it turned out that my client's restricted purpose was not adhered to. And we said, here's money for you to use in a certain way. And the charity said, thanks, and went and used it for a different set of purposes, then went under. And it was the state attorney general in New York that said, we're not sure we think the director should be let off the hook here. So I think it's, you know, just sort of interesting when you're in these fact patterns, particularly regarding conflicts of interest, which self-dealing is sort of the sort of paradigm of conflicts of interest, you should be thinking about not just the Internal Revenue Service's remediation against you potentially, but your state attorney general. And I think that's true whether you're in New York or Texas or California or Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen an uptick in attorneys general of the states being very interested in charities and more active in the charitable area. It goes back several years when I was at Treasury. I got a few calls from the then president of the National Association of State Charity Officials. Those are by and large folks that work for the attorneys general in the various states. And it was very interesting talking with them through a number of things that were going on at the time. Shortly thereafter, the IRS was changing the...